You're now listening to the Engage the Rockies podcast, your go-to podcast for local and state issues concerning Colorado.
Hello, Colorado. This is the Engage the Rockies podcast. I am your host, Jarvis Caldwell, Executive Director of Engage the Rockies. Today, we have a special episode for you. It is Sine Die or Sine Die, however you want to say it, but it is the end of the 74th General Assembly, end of the session at the Colorado Capitol. And we have a very special guest joining us here today to talk about how the session went. And that guest is Representative Ty Winter. Representative Winter is a Republican from House District 47. He is also the Assistant Minority Leader, so the number two on the Republican side in the House of Representatives. And House District 47, the counties include Baca, Bent, Crowley, Huerfano, Kiowa, Los Animas, Otero, Prowers, and Pueblo counties. So a very, very large House district in terms of size. Representative Winter, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Jarvis. Thanks for having me. It's been a long 120 days, but it's good to be done and be back at home and be able to get back in the district with the good people of House District 47.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so for people who aren't as familiar with the Capitol, like you are, and obviously and I am, and some others who work around there. So for legislators like yourself, when you guys live really far away from the Capitol, you know, when I'm talking 3+ hours, like you guys aren't driving 3 hours in the morning to get there, 3 hours in the evening. You just couldn't do it, especially towards the end of session, right? Because I mean, you guys are starting at 8 a.m. and sometimes you're not getting done till literally the next day in the morning time. And so I don't think a lot of people realize that you guys basically, when you're far away, you live up there. And I believe that includes you yourself, right?
Yeah, no, I room with Senator Rod Paulton, my senator, yeah. And you're right, bro. It's a long haul to be away from home. You know, I've got two daughters, both of them still in school, you know, fairly young, and time away from my business and my wife. But, you know, that's the things that we do for this country. You know, If we look at the founding fathers, they risked everything to, you know, create this great experiment that we live in, this free nation. And that's just one of the sacrifices we make. But, you know, it is hard. And once elected to leadership, I mean, first of all, being a legislator is a lot of work. But, you know me very well. Mm-hmm. And once I was elected into leadership, I said that, you know, I was going to do it. You can't lead from the back. You've got to lead from the front. So I was the first one in the building every morning, usually around 6:30 in the morning. And then, you know, I always stayed till almost the end of every committee because in case anything happened that I needed to be there. So spent a lot of time in the Capitol, but it was an honor. You know, first of all, it was an honor to help lead the Mighty 19 into battle. And then second of all, it's an honor to, you know, fight for the values of Republicans all across the state of Colorado. And I look forward to getting back and doing it again next year.
Absolutely. Well, so that answers one of my questions towards the end, but I'll just go ahead and ask it now. So you are running for re-election?
Yes, sir. I am running for re-election. Mm-hmm. I'm going to re-election of both. I'm running for re-election in within House District 47, won by almost 15 points last year, I think, with being an incumbent. I mean, the work I've done for the district, I think that number will climb a little bit. And then I will be running for Assistant Minority Leader again under Minority Leader Puglisi. You know, we stepped in, we settled the caucus. In my election speech, when, you know, I ran unopposed as Assistant Minority Leader, and I stood up at the table and said, there's so much divide in our party. We see it every day. And, you know, there's also conflicting ideas within the state capitol. And that's okay, because as Republicans, you know, we're not bootlickers. We're not lock and step. We don't have the hive mentality. But, you know, it was really an honor to get, you know, the Mighty 19 to come together. I said at my election that this isn't a square table anymore. It's a round table and everybody's ideas matter. And I think that, you know, we did a good job of that. So we're going to pick up the reins again next year. You know, with a year under our belts in leadership, I think that we can, you know, get even better next year and get a lot more done for the people of Colorado.
Awesome. That's great to hear. Well, I'm happy to hear for sure. Okay. So starting back at the top here, how happy are you that session is over? And I think you kind of answered it. It's you get to go back home, which is obviously a great thing.
Right. You know, it's exciting that session's over. I hadn't been actually home in about a month. My family did come up to see me in between, you know, thank God for FaceTime and those type of things. But, you know, I'm excited it's over, but I do miss my Capital family, because at the end of the day, when my family's gone, the Mighty 19 are my family and staff, you know, Nathan and all of our policy staff, you know, you worked in the buildings, you know how close we all are, because all we have is each other. And we spent a lot of hours, bittersweet, you know, even though it's good that we're not in session, because the Dems can't hurt the people any more than they already have. It's still bittersweet, because I, you know, love advocating for our beliefs, and I love the lawmaking process and the, you know, the bantering and, you know, work, trying to work out legislation. And, you know, so it is bittersweet, but it is good to be home. And then the best part about it is being home in my district. I forged such tight relationships with people within House District 47. This is the time I get to go back to them, tell them the things that I accomplished, the things I fought against, and tell them what I'm going to do for them when I get back. I get to go to the county fairs and eat barbecue and do all the parades and, you know, see all the kids, do graduation speeches. So, and just be back with my people, good, hardworking earth people that love God, family, country. And it's good to be home. And then with my family, I miss my wife and kids, you know, horribly. You know, if it wasn't for their support, I could never do this, because it is a sacrifice. And to be back and be able to put my arms around my family and get back to, you know, spending time with them. But it is an adjustment, though. I will tell you that we call it the legislative hangover. You know, you come home and you walk around aimlessly for two or three days. Your habits are completely different than your family's. Your sleeping habits are wonky. But, you know, after you get that 5 days under your belt, you know, get back to normal. So it is a good thing, brother. Good thing.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I appreciate so much that you agreed to do this, because for the listeners, we'll be releasing this on Monday, which will be the 13th of May, but we're recording it on the 10th of May, which is Friday. So session just ended 2 days ago. And so you haven't really had much of a break at all, and you're doing this. So I really appreciate it, because I know a lot of people, whether it's staff members or legislators or the lobby corps or the nonpartisan staff, everybody like disappears for like a couple weeks after session because it's so hectic and you don't hear from anybody. So I really appreciate you doing this.
Anytime.
Thanks, man. So this is your second session being elected in 2022. So you're technically, you're a first term legislator, right? So you got elected in 2022. So there's two sessions within that one term. So this is your second session within your first term. So in 2023, that was technically your first session. So for you personally, how did this compare? Did you feel more, I'm sure you probably felt more comfortable because you know what's going on. You're not like learning it literally there on the spot.
Yeah, no, not only that, I mean, you get there, most of us walk into the building, unless you were an aide or you've been around the building, which I'm not close enough to ever be that kind of way around the building, you know, you kind of wander around like a junior high kid at first. You're trying to figure things out. You know, they say it's like drinking from a fire hose. And then, you know, once you get a few months into session your first year, you're like, wow, you know, figuring out. But going in this year, first of all, you got those jitters gone. Second of all, you know, you've been involved in the policy from the year before. So when you get there, you're not behind that year wondering, okay, even though I kept pretty good track of what happened the year before I got elected, there's still, you're not in the building. So, and I think one of the other important things is the relationships you forge with your colleagues. You know, it allows you to get to know each other the first year. It's kind of like, you know, the first date dance. And then by the time you come in the second year, you've got people's personalities figured out. You know how, to, you know, read your colleagues, and then the people across the aisle, you know how to read them, and you kind of understand, you know, what people's motives are and where they're coming from. And it's a good adjustment. So, yeah, no, for sure. The second year, I feel like I was definitely a more effective, better legislator. And I think that carried over into some of the policy that, you know, I ran, some of the policy we worked hard to stop. So I will say, you know, still a lot more to learn, because I don't think you could ever figure that out even by the time that you ran it out. But yeah, a lot better year all the way around for myself. And I think, you know, Mighty 19 as well.
Well, let me ask you a question, because this is a question I get asked a lot when people, especially when people show up, like when I, you know, I bring people to the Capitol and show them the building, and they see how big the House floor is, especially compared to the Senate. And then you have the gallery where everybody could be sitting. And then you have obviously the 65 legislators. Do you still get those, Do you still get those jitters when you're about to get up there and stand at the dais and, or in the well, I mean, and in front of the whole crowd? Is it, you still get kind of still a little jitters?
You know, it, walking in the building, you know, I think anybody that don't walk in that building and be awe inspired every morning when they walk in there, no matter what kind of day you're having, I don't know how you, it's beautiful. The history, the people that have sat there before us, the laws that have been passed and beaten in that building. But, you know, there's, it's, there's something about it. You know, when it comes to that, we had special sessions. So we were there, we ramped up again. And, you know, don't get me wrong. The first couple of days, it's like getting on a bike, you know, it's a little wobbly at first and you get those jitters, but then you jump right back into it. Nothing like the first year, but yeah, it's, there's something about that place, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it, it can make you happy, but it, you can be sad at the same time. It's the most emotional roller coaster ride I've ever been on in my life.
Right, right. It is. It does. And then when you add in like the sleep deprivation part of it, because I mean, I'm and for full disclosure for the audience, I've talked about this before on other episodes, but so I did work there for the House Republicans for 2 years. I was an aide the first year, and then I worked there in 2023 as the comms director, which was your first year. And so for the audience to know that. But, you know, there were, I mean, especially towards the end of session, April towards the first week of May when session ends. I mean, we were there, we were starting at like 8 o'clock in the morning, and there was 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes I think on a gun bill, we were there to like 7 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? And it was like, you would try to, I know some of the legislators, they would get up there and they were, you know, filibustering or something on a bill, even though we don't call it filibustering, but they would go and sneak off to their office for like 10, 15 minutes and take a quick nap because they just came off the floor for like over an hour, and then they would have to disappear for a second, maybe eat like a granola bar and try to sleep for 10 minutes and then come back, you know? And it was like, and you did that for if what it felt like weeks on end. Right. It's rough. Yeah. For anybody thinking about running or having any part at the Capitol, just understand it's like you said, it's a roller coaster. It's got its ups and downs. There's the fun times that a lot of times people see where you're kind of joking and laughing and this and that, but then there's a stretch of it there where it's just, it doesn't seem very fun at all, but.
Right.
Okay. So what are some legislative bills that you worked on that you were successful with? And then maybe some that you weren't unsuccessful or that you were unsuccessful with.
You know, Senate Bill 35 was huge for me. That was the human trafficking bill that I did with Senator Byron Pelton. It was massive. It isn't 100% what we wanted because judiciary in the House is the most radical judiciary probably in state capital history. You know, I think six of the members are downtown Denver legislators, and a lot of them are anti-law enforcement, pro-crime. And not necessarily pro-crime, but the policies that they promulgate out of the building basically make it to where nobody's responsible for the crimes they commit. So, you know, that was really tough having to change some of the language. But one thing that it did was, is it's a good start for Colorado to let people know that if they're going to traffic individuals, that you do it in Colorado, you're going to get punished. We lift the statute of limitations up to 20 years. I think it was like at 3 years. And what we found out is these traffickers would basically keep a thumb on their victims until they knew the statute ran out. So that helped them,
Give them
actually file charges and get with the police. And secondly, we put sentence enhancers on the sentencing that happened right now. I'm excited about that. I ran an agricultural stewardship tax credit bill. And what happened right there is, as we see tons of money being redistributed out of rural Colorado with the green energy agenda, with tax credits for e-bikes and everything. And at the end of the day, I'm a fiscal conservative, but my constituents pay taxes too. And I needed to infuse some of their tax dollars back into the district. And what it does is right now we see with soil health and carbon credits, all these big companies claiming these carbon credits when all along farmers and ranchers have been the true stewards of the land. They're the ones that have been sequestering carbon for this state for years, and they never get any incentive for doing it. So to be able to infuse some dollars back into my district. I also ran a para bill, which it's also hard in House District 47 to recruit and maintain teachers and staff. So what this does is it allows people that are retired, superintendents, principals, admin, that if they want to come back into the education field, that they don't get hit on their retirement, all while still contributing to para, which means that they're still helping, fund the education part of it. I did a firefighter license plate bill to make sure, not that the plate was already there, but it was to make sure that the funds are going to the right place. A bill that really affects El Paso County is, we all know about Riley Whitelaw. And Courtney Whitelaw Riley was the little girl that was murdered in El Paso County. And myself and Representative Mark Snyder ran a minor autopsy release requirement. And it just makes sure that, you know, it strikes a good balance between protecting the family and also allowing for the First Amendment of press. You know, I love the Constitution. So this just makes it to where the press has to do a little bit of investigative more reporting. You know, it was an honor to run and pass that bill for Courtney, Riley's mom. And, you know, it was a bill to be on. Also, another bill that I worked on, which is really involves more of rural Colorado, is an asbestos and lead bait abatement program. Right now, fines are collected on asbestos, and this just allows these people to apply for some of this money that comes from the fines to be able to do some of this lead paint and asbestos cleanup. I also ran the Physician's Assistant Licensure Compact, which what that was is last year we ran a bill to basically make it where a physician assistant could, instead of working under direct supervision of a doctor, they could work in collaboration, which is huge for all of Colorado, but especially rural Colorado, to recruit good quality medical care professionals into our district. This allows us to recruit from other states in the compact. I did a couple bills that were just reducing like blank government and streamlining things. And then I also ran weight and oversized motor vehicle permit bill. And what that is it really helps out on the Eastern Plains with the Port to Plains pathway, which is a stretch of highway out there. And what it does is it makes sure that these guys that are running the road are actually getting their permits, because basically they're beating the roads down. And if they're not running on the right roads with the right permits, they're destroying these small rural highways. And then it also frees it up to where, say, there's a tornado in Colorado and they're bringing in oversized loads of equipment in from Nebraska to help us out, that the state patrol can issue emergency permits to these people so we can get you know, help to areas faster. So that's what I really done. One thing that didn't get passed that I'm working on that I think I can get it done next year is you were there last year when I ran an amendment on the tax credit for electric vehicles, that Colorado taxpayer dollars shouldn't be going to vehicles that have batteries that contain rare earth materials that have been mined by child slave labor. I brought a resolution here. I actually worked with somebody on the other side to kind of narrow in on the resolution and make sure that we do it right. It fell off the calendar based on time, but next year I will bring it back in a bipartisan manner. And basically what it's going to say is the state of Colorado needs to figure out what they're going to do, because and the reason I'm bringing it is if the Dems are going to push these climate goals and then they're going to virtue signal to us all the time about taking care of people, well, they shouldn't be able to brag in front of their constituents about all they're doing for the climate, all on the backs of labor, slave labor, children. That facade has to stop. So I'm disappointed I didn't get through this year. I also ran another bill that I'm going to bring back next year, and a lot of other states, including Florida, do a tax-free holiday for their kids' school clothes and school supplies. That bill made it out of committee. We just didn't have time, and the state didn't have enough resources to get it done this year. But what it'll be is if I get it passed, it'll be the last weekend in July, and you and your family will be able to go in for like 72 hours and buy school clothes and supplies, and you won't pay state sales tax on them. It's a Republican conservative value. And, you know, I think it's a good thing. So we're going to run that definitely for sure next year. And in my wheelhouse, other than other legislation, in my actual purview, those are the bills that I passed and some that I wished I could have got through.
Yeah, I love the tax holiday idea. I mean, it's for anybody who thinks that the state can't afford it. The governor this week on Monday just signed the $40.6 billion budget, which is like $2 billion more than was originally allocated. And if you go back to 2019, it was only like 29 or 30 billion. So it's went up like 30 something percent just in the last few years. So, you know, when I think about tax holidays and stuff to help out school kids and things like that, I'm like, yeah, you know what? If anybody says we can't afford it, I don't think they're being completely honest. The state can definitely afford it. You know what I mean? So you named, it sounded like you had a bunch of successful bills. Were there any bills that you really wanted to get through that didn't, besides, I know you mentioned the child labor one, but did you run a bill that just straight up got killed? Cause I know you had at least one or two last year, 2023.
I ran a birth control bill, because they're starting to hammer on rural Coloradans for using burn barrels. That got straight up killed. And then I ran a fatality bill that was for a constituent, and it was more a conversation piece for CDPHE to like fill some gaps. I knew the bill was never going to make it out.
Yeah.
And it actually worked. The constituent that I ran it for actually worked. And then one of the people from CDPHE said that it pointed out the gap that was missed. Those were, but you know what? You know me, I'm a limited government kind of guy. I picked and yield legislation that would help my constituents with the least amount of burden on government. So run too much more than that. I think legislators that go and run 30, 40, 50 bills, that's overreach, anywhere between 5-10 bills, depending on what they are. So I tried to stay kind of in that realm of things. Help my dish. Don't go up there and try to burn the world.
Well, and you know what? I'm glad that you mentioned that, because you can bring some good perspective here, because a lot of people talk about this. But so basically, legislators, you guys get 5 bills. Right. So you have 5 bills, and then you usually introduce 2 or 3 towards the beginning of session. Then however many you have left, kind of like a month or two into session, you submit them. Right. And so you don't necessarily submit 5 all at the same time. But now if people are just doing their basic math, you have 100 legislators, you have 35 in the Senate, 65 in the House. Right. So the basic math is 100 legislators, 5 bills each. That's only 500 bills. But what we saw this year was something like 750, 760 bills, getting close to 800. Can you kind of give the audience some perspective or background? Like, how do you get more than 500 when everybody's only allowed 5? Is it the speaker adding them, the Senate president adding them as you go along, basically?
You get some of that. And then there's interdepartmental bills. You know what I mean? There's bills that have to be done, like, you know, departmental fix, agricultural bills that come through that they get through, the summer interim committees that say, okay, the interim committee decided to run these bills. You know, these are legislators, like the asbestos bill. That's where that came from. That's actually a bill that came out of the AG's office after visiting the southeast corner and talking to constituents. We're trying to find a way to fix that asbestos problem. That's why some bills get added on. And then there's some legislators, especially in the supermajority, that they want more bills and they get late bills. But I would say, like out of the 5 I ran, only I think 3 of my priority bills got through. And then some bills that came to me, you get bills that come in, like the 2 reductions of government, both were, agency bills. And they're like, hey, Rep Winter wants to reduce government. Let's have him help us on these. And then some come that are like, hey, this is from your district and this is a good bill and we'd like to get you couple legislators on it because we know you'll fight for it. So there's a whole mix to how it's done.
Gotcha.
But I think that there was less maybe late bills that came from legislators this year because the Dems knew that the kitty was dry. There was hard, like compared to the first year I was there, there was like not even any type of money compared to that. So I think that's why most of your bills you saw come that were late bills were technical fixes. There were some legislators, they did get some late bills, but that's kind of like the makeup of how it happens.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I appreciate you explaining that. And then kind of last question for you here, Rep Winter, and we want to respect your time. So you can get back to with your family. Well, I appreciate it. So what are some major things that happened this session? I can kind of give you an idea where I'm going with this, because just from the interactions that I see on social media, whether it's Rule 14, whether it's things getting, people being shut down at the well for saying things that seem pretty basic, like illegal immigrants and stuff like that. Can you kind of give us an idea from like your perspective, having that happen, being there on the floor when all that's going on and all the talking that you guys are doing about it.
Right. So basically the difference from last year, they kind of started last year. I think, and myself, you know, the whole caucus was part of the negotiation process, which was, I think, a little bit different this year. You know, Rose and I, we look at the caucus as an organic thing. We were elected to leadership, but not necessarily to tell what the caucus to do, because that's how isn't how we ran our caucus. We fostered an organic environment where we brought the bare bones of whatever we did within whatever dealings we did to the caucus. And then we worked as a group to come to consensus. We didn't always all agree, but for the most part, we agreed on almost everything. And then if we didn't agree, even the dissenting opinions were woven into whatever type of work we did. I think Rose and I held our ground with the majority, and they self-corrected. If you notice the infringements on our speaking from the first few weeks of session to the way session ended were a lot less and a lot less abusive. The lumber was being swung nonstop the first couple weeks, and as we pushed back, we started to, our comms department started to clip their hypocrisy and post it back on social media. So I think they started to self-correct. You know, another thing is, it's hard is at the end of the day, the rules are set up for them. You know, chairs have the discretion to do what they do. And that's one thing that we try to talk all the time, you know, with constituents and say, hey, we're fighting as hard as we can. But at some point, the rules are the rules. Don't get me wrong. Pushed this information outside the building. We clipped every time they redirected. We clipped every time they infringed on speech. Rule 14 and 16 weren't used close to as much this year as it was last year. It was, I don't have the numbers, but I would say way under half. And I think that had to be negotiating we did behind closed doors and saying, we will not allow you to impede on the free speech of our members and kick them out of the well. Not that it never happened, but a lot less than it happened the first year. And especially, you know, in the last few weeks, I think we fought hard. I think that we did what we could. Inside the rules, but we've pushed. All I can say is for those, everybody paying attention, this isn't over. The House Republicans have a plan on what we're doing with this. It's just going to take some time to put it all together. At some point, we're probably going to be out fundraising and for reasons that I want, you know, when the time's right, we want to make sure that we do this properly. But we are working on that issue. Awesome. And I think that we're going to gain some traction. And when the time's right, I'll come back on the show and we can definitely touch base on everything.
For sure. So,
And I think that was, you know, like there was one time we asked for a weekend off and they said no. And we told them, okay, you want to do that? We're going to debate you and read every single bill at length because what you're bringing, first of all, isn't good legislation. And second of all, you're shoving this stuff down our throat. And, you know, we battered up and we gave them a beating for a whole Saturday and they didn't like it. And I think that helped us in negotiations because they're like, okay, Republican leadership forever has threatened this tool and they've never used it. And us, we were like, okay, this is what the caucus wants to do. And we swung Thor's hammer over and over and over again. And I think that that really, when they realized, hey, we've got a caucus that's united first and foremost. And then also we have a caucus that don't just threaten, they will strike that hammer. That changed the way they negotiated, which goes back to Rule 14. Rule 16, allowing us substantive debate to represent our constituents well. And I think that if people go back, did they correct some language and stuff? Yeah, but we put the brakes to it and we negotiated from a position of power this year. And I think that that's been lost in the building in the past.
Yeah. And for the audience, and I'm sorry, I didn't explain this beforehand. So, the speaker sets the rules, right? And I think you guys, do you guys vote on the rules, that the speaker drafts up, or is it just the speaker makes
The opening day of the first session?
That's right. So Rule 14 is a rule that's been around for a very long time. And it has to do with, second readings, right? So when you're debating the bills and you're putting forward amendments and things like that. So if Rule 14 is invoked by the majority leader, then it's voted on. It just needs a simple majority. And basically what that does is that says that limits debate to 1 hour. So when you think of filibustering and things like that, and you're like, well, you know what? We really don't like this bill. We're going to talk on this bill until we force them to come to the table, right? Because, you know, we've been talking on this bill for 12, 13, 14 hours. They get tired. They go, okay. You know, we'll give you these amendments if you just stop talking, right? So it's a very effective tool that's been used for decades and decades and decades. Well, last year in 2023 session, the speaker used Rule 14 for the first time, I think, in history. Because I went back and did the research with a nonpartisan staff. As far as we know, that was the first time in history it had ever been used. And it kind of broke that seal. And then it ended up getting used, I think it was 16 times. Uh-huh. In 2023, it's pretty incredible considering 16 times when it had never been used in the history of the Colorado legislature. And then you mentioned Rule 16 for those that don't know. So third reading, everybody's limited to like 10 minutes each. And then you actually vote. That's when it's an actual recorded vote and you push the button, you know, yes, yay or nay. So Rule 16 is invoked and voted on, and it ends debate right away for third reading. So it's like, it doesn't have that 1 hour grace period like Rule 14 has. If it's invoked, Rule 16 is invoked, it ends debate right away. And then you guys vote on the bill. So when you take those in combination, the majority can really crack down on the minority's ability to fight, because I mean, they can literally invoke Rule 14 right away, limit 2 to 1 hour, and then you go to third reading, invoke Rule 16, and then it ends it. So, I mean, they can basically keep a bill from second and third reading down to basically an hour, hour and 15 minutes if they really want to force it down, which, you know, really silences the minority, in my opinion, because you don't have that option to sit there and fight it and force them to come to the table. And so, you know, there are some other techniques as far as reading bills at length and stuff like that, that you can kind of draw it out a little bit, but sometimes the bills are only a few pages long and you're only buying yourself a few extra minutes. And so, yeah, I just wanted to give that perspective for the audience who, isn't familiar with Rule 14, 16, things like that.
You know what, Jarvis, and this is what we reminded them in negotiations and on the floor all the time. Even though they have a supermajority in the building, 46% of Colorado voters voted for Republicans in 2022. Right. The numbers. Yep. So in the building, do they hold the supermajority? Yes, but among the population, they don't. And that's why our voices can't be silenced. They claim that they have this, you know, supermajority, which they do. They claim that they have the ability just to lay down the hammer. And, you know, we constantly remind them that 46% of people voted for Republicans. You do not have their mandate. It's not, you know, it's not 80%, you know, it's not, they don't have it. So we remind them all the time. And I think that helps us as well by bringing them back to reality, because they are drunk with power.
Yeah. Yeah. I know they use that, the mandate term a lot, because when you look, you go, okay, 19 Republicans, 46 Democrats. And they would use that, especially last year, they used that mandate, phrase all the time. And I remember, it was myself and the chief of staff at the time who's different than the chief of staff now, but we sat down and we added up every single vote cast for a House Republican and every vote cast for a House Democrat, win or lose, didn't matter. Every single vote for a House Republican in every single race, every vote for a House Democrat. And when you do the numbers exactly, it's between 46 and 47%. It's somewhere in there. And then if you like remove the third party candidate that, you know, would get maybe 1% or 2% in some of the races, it comes out just between Republicans and Democrats. It's like over 47% voted for a House Republican. And it's like, the number was like just shy of 1.1 million people in Colorado voted for a House Republican, and right around 1.2 million voted for a House Democrat. So, I mean, it is really, really close to 50-50. We made it a point to remind them of that all the time, you know, because a lot of races, there was only like a very slim percentage, like within 1% win or lose, you know what I mean? And it's binary. So it's like, hey, even if you get one more vote, you win, but you don't just throw out, you know, that doesn't give you a mandate that all of those other people, that 49% in your district, you know, doesn't matter. Right.
Right. 100%.
All right, sir. Well, listen, we're right around the 30-minute mark. I really appreciate it. I know the audience appreciates it. It's hard to get a hold of you guys sometimes during the session, and I don't want to bug you, especially getting closer to the end of session. And so I was like, you know what? Even though I have a great relationship with most of the legislators up there, I'm going to wait until at the end of session to start bugging you guys And so if I'm not mistaken, I think you are the first legislator that we've had on, and, you know, we've had on a lot of policy people. So you're our first one. So, and we really appreciate it. And thanks for giving us kind of that behind the scenes background on it. But, if anybody wants to find out more about you, Representative Winter, how can they find out more about you?
You can go to my, Facebook page, mm-hmm. Representative Ty Winter, same on the X or Twitter handle. And then you can go to www.tyhd47.com. I'll have the legislation that I've done updated on there. And, just know that, the Mighty 19 fought hard. We're going to come back strong. We've got some really good candidates running for office. We're going to gain some numbers. Realistically, I think we can pick up 5 or 6 seats. And if the voters of Colorado have had enough, we could pick up more. But, we're really, really getting some seats that we need to pick back up. And, we're going to go back and fight. We're going to keep fighting for life, pursuit of happiness. We're going to fight for the 46% of voters. We're going to fight for God, family, country, the Constitution, and our constituents. And we're going to get back against, the overreach of the government. So, mm-hmm. Just know that we're in the fight. We're going to work hard this summer, and we're going to come back with more numbers next year. And we're going to give them the business. So I appreciate you, Jarvis. Thanks for having me on. I'd love to come back on for an update, maybe this summer sometime. We can chat more about, what the House minority is doing. We're going to have some fundraising events coming up. And, all I can tell everybody is you find a really good candidate that you support and you want to back, knock doors for them, make phone calls for them, donate to campaigns. I mean, fundraising is a real deal, and people need to realize that, even though it's a part of politics that none of us like, the Democrats out fundraises like crazy, and we got to start getting behind candidates, and we've got to start winning races and doing all of our parts. So just know that the Mighty 19 are going to keep doing their part to fight for you all. And we just need you all to be the cavalry to come back in, back us up, and also back up the people that are going to help us turn that Mighty 19 into the Mighty 25 to 30. So,
yeah. Yeah. And, I was in my personal capacity, I was doing a briefing with some parents the other day, some school parents, and they asked me, they said, what does it matter whether there's 30 Republicans or 15 Republicans or whatever. If you're not the majority, you're not the majority. And I pointed out to him, I said, no, well, what it matters is in committees, because right now in your committees, a lot of times you have 8 Democrats and 3 Republicans. And I'm like, but if you had it like 30 Republicans in the House of Representatives and 35 Democrats, now that committee is 6 Democrats and 5 Republicans. And if you have a really bad bill, all you have to do is flip one moderate, and then now you got the bill killed. And so it is actually extremely important. Again, so Engage the Rockies, we're nonprofit, we're nonpartisan, but just for people to understand the importance of the makeup of the legislature, the closer you are to 50-50, then the closer the committees are to 50-50, and then you only have to flip one person to kill a bad bill. So that's just for the audience. That's the perspective there. Representative Winter, I appreciate it very much, sir. And I will take you up on that, and we will bring you back on here in the interim.
Awesome. See what you're working on. Thank you for what you do.
Yes, sir.
God bless Colorado and God bless America.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Engage the Rockies podcast, your go-to podcast for local and state issues concerning Colorado.